happy to be here with all these other amazing researchers and implementers. I will be presenting a bit of my Fulbright research that I conducted last year as a Fulbright scholar. I was based at the University of Calabar, and I conducted, as Michelle said, one of the first multi-site studies on obstetric fistula causes and consequences, and the first one to look and compare health professionals' ideas about causes and consequences with patients. I have no relationships to disclose. We're going to briefly touch on some background and literature review to sort of ground us in terms of the research methods that we decided to use, and then we'll move on to key findings and some way forward. So just a bit of background. Worldwide, 2 million women are estimated to live with obstetric fistula. Obstetric fistula is a preventable maternal morbidity that develops after prolonged obstructive labor or badly performed failed obstetric surgery. And it's the hole or fistula between the urethra and the vagina, or the rectum and the vagina. And Nigeria, which is about the size of California, with about 20% of sub-Saharan Africa's population, or about 170 million people, accounts for anywhere from 300 to 800,000 women currently with an obstetric fistula, or about 40% of the world's burden. In response to these growing trends, the Nigerian Federal Ministry of Health, together with the Ministry of Women Affairs and several big partners like UNFPA and USAID, back in 2007, formed the world's first fistula task force to respond to this. And that created several new strategies, as well as amped up efforts, such as the Fistula Fortnight campaign and Fistula Care, and now Fistula Care Plus, that are mainly focused on treatment for women living with fistula, repairs, and training of doctors and surgeons and social workers and nurses in fistula care. So it's into this background, and with this background, that I came in and I was interested in, since there's been all this new treatment and a lot of focus there, and especially healthcare professionals getting newly trained, how has anything changed in relation to the dominant narratives that are that we currently see in obstetric fistula writings? So as you can probably imagine, most of the predisposing factors related to obstetric fistula currently in the literature related to Nigeria are physiological and socio and cultural factors. These have been largely based on quantitative studies done both in Nigeria and in other places, other countries. The two big ones that's physiological are childhood malnutrition can lead to small pelvis development, stunted growth, which could put a girl at risk to develop obstructive labor, and if prolonged because of lack of ability to access emergency obstetric care, she could develop a fistula or die. And then also women, we tend to perform badly when we're younger and older in terms of having babies. So that also can put women at risk. And then another big one that often comes up is that the culture of Africa, or the culture of patriarchy, or early marriage, or can put women at risk. And so that plays into this dominant narrative of third world women as being passive and men being overpowering, and traditional ideas about childbirth that women fear hospitals, so they always want to deliver at home. However, as you can tell, there are competing ideas about this. Recent multi-site studies, including in Nigeria, multi-country studies, as well as several literature reviews, have showed that this is not always grounded. The previous findings are not grounded always in evidence, and that many women do go to hospitals and encounter limited services or clinicians. There's also increasing issues related to iatrogenic or surgical causes for obstetric fistula. Additionally, there's a lack of qualitative or ethnographic research, especially looking at what the previous presenter talked about in terms of authoritative knowledge, that only doctors or epidemiologists or public health professionals like me, we have the knowledge, and what the women talk about is beliefs, what patients talk about is beliefs. And so looking at childbirth stories and trying to understand that. And so several ethnographic field works have done that in Niger and Ethiopia. So my question came out of this, trying to tease out, how do women seeking treatment for obstetric fistula and health professionals involved in fistula care at 4 fistula repair centers in Nigeria describe causes and consequences of obstetric fistula? Today we'll be focusing on causes. So really quick, these are our methods. We conducted in-depth interviews, focus group discussions, and participant observation over about a 6 to 8 month period at 4 different sites. with pre post-op fistula patients and health professionals. The data analysis was quantitative and qualitative, and the quantitative is still coming out. That was done in conjunction with USAID, and so we're still waiting on finalizing those findings. So what I'm going to be presenting today is more of the richer data that I think personally that emerges in terms of what women and health patients and health professionals think about the causes related to obstetric fistula. So briefly, some summary statistics, highlighting especially that on average, the women we spoke with were 24 years of age. Only about a quarter had ever heard of a fistula before they developed it. At the time of getting a fistula, they had already had at least two pregnancies, and they had one living child. On average, at least over 50% had completed primary school, with almost 40% having completed secondary school, and the majority were married both before and after fistula, having developed it. Our healthcare professionals were from the four main research sites, as well as Abuja, the federal capital, and we have a mix of majority Nigerian, surgeons, nurses, social workers, policymakers, ministers, as well as a few non-governmental representatives such as UNFPA, USAID, and Fistula Foundation, and a few faith-based organizations that were not Nigerian. So the principal reasons mentioned why obstetric fistula occurs in Nigeria, as you can see, we have some discongruence and some connects here. Overall, obstetric fistula patients bring up a lot of issues related to healthcare mismanagement, whereas it didn't really come up with healthcare professionals. They mainly focus on ignorance of patients, lack of knowledge about biomedicine, and the cultural beliefs as predisposing women to develop fistula. Both, however, and this is really important, brought up structural and economic factors that limit women's ability to resolve labor complications. So I'll briefly touch on some of these, focusing on healthcare challenges and access issues. So as you can see here, generally, the failure, health professionals framed the failure of women to deliver in a hospital or to arrive in a hospital on time as the major reason they had a prolonged obstructed labor that led to obstetric fistula. So over 91% of health professionals say this. However, 74% of the patients we spoke with report hospital deliveries. Additionally, many of these patients bring up 73 out of 86 that they encountered medical negligence or mismanagement of their surgeries. They bring up bodily experiences of nurses pushing on their stomach, of waiting for days to get seen, and of actively trying to seek healthcare in the places they know they should be. For instance, this woman says, "My own fistula came of a catheter. They put catheter and leave me for bed. Only me, I try to push my baby out." On the other hand, about 16% or 7 health professionals brought up healthcare challenges. However, they brought up a constant struggle they have, which, I mean, I can understand the women, because you're the one to finally get the baby out somehow, she will say you're the one who causes the fistula. And again, understanding that many of these healthcare workers are under incredibly constrained, resource-limited settings, trying to get that. Which brings up this next one that they brought up was women knowing they should go to a hospital and showing up and waiting for days. For instance, this woman, she was in the northeast area where there's Boko Haram attacks, and so she was having a real hard time. I was to birth on Tuesday, so I went to Mishika Clinic, and from there to Mubi, but no doctors as well. I waited. When the doctors came back, they did the CS on Friday, but the baby had died and started to decay in my body. Additionally, antenatal care, ANC, or prenatal care, this came up with both professionals, healthcare professionals, and patients, but in different ideas in that almost 20% of healthcare professionals said women didn't go to ANC, and that, therefore, they didn't know what to do in case of labor complications, and that was a connecting factor in why they developed a fistula. On the other hand, over a third of the women reported going for prenatal care. However, only 2 recall ever making a birth plan about what would happen if complications developed or if who would take you to the hospital or issues like that. For instance, this woman says she did an x-ray ultrasound. I'm not a doctor, but I saw the results. Narrow border. But nurse said, never mind. So when the problem, the obstetric fistula, has happened, the doctor saw the narrow border. They said, had a qualified doctor seen that, nothing like to labor for that long. It would have been an automatic CS, I have my son, and I'd be dry. The big area where we see, this is a breakdown, sorry, the pie graph, is the patients that we had distributed. So Sokoto is in the north, Jos is central, and Abaklihi is to the east, and Uyo is to the south. Again, a convenient sampling, so that's a limitation. It's not definitely not generalizable, but that wasn't, you know, the point of the study was to bring out richness, different beliefs. And these are some that the health professionals brought up, especially this one, real woman, thank you, push at home. Over 3/4 brought that up. So because we were using the grounded theory such that we could bring in new questions as we went, we started to ask this to women. Have you heard of this belief that real women push at home, so that's why you don't go? And they said, yes, we've heard of it, but that wasn't a reason. No, none of the patients we talked to ever brought this up of knowing about it unless prompted. However, majority of the clinicians brought it up, as well as many talked about tradition or culture as predisposing women, something about the culture that makes them not go to the hospital. For instance, the health minister in Calabar says the health centers are as close as possible to people, so access is no longer an issue. Instead, it's tied to the culture of people. Early marriage was a very big one, especially it was often tied in with Islam, and this notion that if you're married early, in the north, most girls are there, they don't go to school, they're married off early, so immediately they marry older men, this BBF can occur. That was from the program director at the Federal Ministry of Health. But again, as we saw, over 60% of the patients were at least 20 years of age or older. Ignorance related to patients' ignorance or their lack of education also came up as something that limited them to understand that maybe going to a hospital is a good thing, which is what the health professionals believed it was. 56% of health professionals cite lack of education. The victims are usually young and illiterate. That was a quote from the Federal Ministry of Health, taken from their task force. However, 62% of the patients had completed at least primary school or higher. And another more specific way this came up was, again, about the health professionals talking about biomedical ignorance, that the patients lacked the good knowledge about Western medicine. Women take wrong decisions about their health because they are illiterate. They don't have education, you know, Western education about topics like biology, health, and hygiene. And that if the women had this education, if they were educated, they would have gone and had a good, you know, safe delivery. So concluding, two areas or where they really overlap that I lumped together were limited finances and transport problems. So both healthcare professionals and patients bring up the fact that women tried to push at home in order to save costs. And additionally, I think our last presenter brought up, majority of women give birth just fine at home or on our own. And so that's what they know. And if you're already in a limited situation, you might as well try to push it home. And again, these women had already had at least 2 pregnancies, of which majority had a living child. So they'd had successful births before. And women reported having to spend over $100 to get their baby out and to recover. And they only, on average, made $75 a month. About 75% either had forceps or CS to end their labor that ended in fistula. And additionally, transport problems come up related to inability to access any reliable transport, motorbike, or the distance of the facility. So as you can see, 28% of the health professionals and over 45% of patients cite transport issues. The post-war north in the central Nigeria says they walk on foot where they can get a vehicle to carry them on to any clinic, top left of a hospital. So just to summarize, we have some discordance and congruence here. As we see, the biggest ones that come up are healthcare access issues that a lot of the women bring up in terms of encountering medical negligence and issues with clinician and unavailability, whereas many of the healthcare professionals, in addition to focusing on just the physiology of the obstetric fistula, also brought up a lot of culture and tradition, the preponderance of it that keeps women at home. Apparently, and they fail to deliver in a hospital. But we see a congruence, we see similarities related to the logistics and the transport and the finances and the challenges. So coming out of that, ways forward, I would see, as well as several others have suggested in Ethiopia, where there's also a lot of obstetric fistula and programming there, is triaging and integrating community-specific interventions. So safe motherhood campaigns, but especially that middle one, is incentivizing, like we have here with healthcare shortage areas, that obstetric clinicians said they'd be willing to work in less underserved areas, but there's nothing to do out there for their family. There's no good education, so why would they go out there and do this work if they're not going to be able to support their family? So so trying to incentivize that to get good qualified surgeons and obstetricians and gynecologists and nurses to work in underserved areas. And then life skills trainings to improve empathetic, compassionate care at the prenatal and obstetric level services. And then additionally, sliding scale fees for ANC and obstetric services, and all of this combined with awareness and safe motherhood campaigns that are already ongoing. And then together with the Federal Ministry of Health and Women Affairs, based on this study and a few others, we're looking to build a comprehensive, measurable obstetric fistula policy that is better aligned with international maternal health indicators. So thank you all for coming and your attention, and also to the patients and health professionals who, as you saw from some of the quotes, generously share their perspectives on very deeply personal and problematic topics, and to my colleagues at University of Calabar who were very generous and warm and welcoming me to their community. So that's my references. And so, thank you.
Several questions, but I'll open up the floor to our audience. Do we have questions for our presenters? But certainly those, there's several restrictions in there. There's, for instance, South Carolina had recently, I guess a few years ago, made it where you can no longer have a VBAC at home. So there are lots of laws and restrictions, but they were legally able to practice.
And the nurses,
they
legally required to have collaborative.
Yeah, they couldn't practice.
Especially with the divergence between the physicians and the midwives and the different types of midwives. And can you talk about, you know, how that can be addressed? So what are some of the next steps for this?
Well, I think before we can really look at programmatic things, you probably need more research to get more voices into it, to really know where they could be. But I think part of it is that I think there needs to be more information about how everybody is trained, and more acceptance, I think, of the range of expertise that each person brings. I think we would need to have everybody on board in the hospital about what a transfer entails, and to accept the direct injury midwives' records as an important part of that transfer, and for women to not be belittled or complained, because we still get that, you know, what were you doing at home, right? Mm-hmm. You know, now you're in trouble, and now we've got to fix it because you guys didn't know what you were doing. That's basically what happens a lot of times, and there's expressions that women are not concerned about the safety of their babies if they deliver at home. We might look more at, you know, the Netherlands, the majority of births are at home by midwives, and then smaller amounts are for people, you know, So I think too that AACA might be able to do some things when you have more mid-level people coming in, and that perhaps there'll be more efficacy given to more autonomy and acceptance that people are trained. And I would think most likely the most expansion you'd be able to see would be certified nurse midwives having a bigger range. So that's probably where you'd see the most likely changes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. About 95% of all births here are in the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Great. And so, Ms. Phillips, this is kind of similar. So you also talk about divergence between the patient's views and the position of healthcare provider. And you mentioned in one of your slides about the life skills training. So I was wondering, is that something that's already in existence? Are they doing it and just not doing enough of it?
Right. They just started piloting it last year through the Federal Ministry of Health with Fistula Care Plus, which is administered by Gender Health through USAID.
Mm-hmm.
And life skills training program has been, it's supposed to encourage empathetic, or train them in community-based empathetic care, understanding, mm-hmm. quote-unquote, cultural competency, mm-hmm. and with mostly just nurses right now it's focused mm-hmm. on, and it's been piloted just in northern Nigeria so far at several sites, and they're trying to expand it for more and what they've seen, and it's not just related to fistula care, just mm-hmm. for any nurse who does prenatal or obstetric care, and they've seen it to be really successful, and there's supposed to be at least two nurses for every level 2 or level 3 clinic and then hospital that are that would be trained in that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good idea, and it seems like program's working in practice, but they definitely, like, some of the limitations they said were that there need to be all the nurses should be trained in it and to do it, but we also should get more of them, because mm-hmm. that was also what the women brought up, is that they under, like, or not the women, the nurses often would bring up, or even some of the surgeons who are all male, in that they're just so overworked.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really hard to take that time to be standing, and also that, you know, they don't have the, it's not like here where they have to pay for everything they want, right? The consumables, everything they consume, they use in the hospital, they have to pay for. And so there's just such multi-level
issues. They still have to bring all their stuff with them.
Right. So yeah, syringes or a bucket to, like, you know, stand over for the blood to go in. Or,
mm-hmm.
yeah, things like that.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple in the comments.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was just sort of going off that. You know, are there traditional birth attendants that are attending some of the births at home, or community health workers that are doing some prenatal care that could be sort of accessible?
Definitely, yeah. There's traditional birth attendants or traditional midwives are, very common in many parts of Nigeria, and there is a large perception that they're not well trained, and that they are a reason women are staying at home, or they're misinforming women, and so there's an attempt by the Federal Ministry of Health at state level to go in and train more midwives and to empower them with the skills and knowledge, but it's hasn't really been successful. And from what the studies I've read, because it did come up, and that's another, I don't have a paper that's coming out soon, and that, and we bring up the TBAs, and that the idea that women are always delivering with TBAs, and TBAs are, like, causing this problem. There is a lot of, which I think has been seen in other research, that change to our way, change to the biomedical Western model, or you know, we're not going to give you any money or any services.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still that sort of issues trying to get worked out. So even though they're aware of it, they still have to figure out how to change it.